Ah, there's Craig. Today we're going to be hearing the presentations for SIP 2004, 2005, and 2006. Looks like we have Caleb here already. Caleb, do you want to start with 2006?
Sure, of course. So SIP 2006 is the Lyra integration. So basically, currently, when Lyra protocol wants to delta hedge the LPs, the traders' positions, options positions, they perform exchanges with our contracts. And basically, this direct integration manager, it allows us to give them like fees that are different from the fees that are offered to other exchanges. Now, why is that possible? It's because of the way it's used. It's not used to in terms of hedging. It's not used in terms of like monitoring for latency, rather than hedging a portfolio. And there is slippage on traders' ability to take on positions as well on Lyra. So it's pretty well robust to latency attacks. This is why we're able to offer it. Hopefully, though, Lyra will be moving to perps eventually, which would not require this special pathway to exchanges. But in the meantime, with this SIP, we offer that would be able to offer like 10 basis point fees exchanges on ETH and BTC, and disabling dynamic fees. I do want to mention that this should have been like done since the beginning when direct integration was launched, but Lyra was not ready because of the way their contracts were set up. And they updated their contracts recently so that they can accommodate for direct integrations.
Does Lyra have reason to believe that this is going to increase usage? Like, are they seeing users complain about fees and churn away, or are we just wanting to earn less?
So from what I understand, I don't know how much of public knowledge it is or not, but a treasury does rebate Lyra for fees that are excessive, you know. So in terms of fees, it should be not impacting users as much as it is impacting treasury, because treasury is currently subsidizing.
Got it. So we expect the net fees to synthetics would stay roughly the same because we won't have to do the rebate. But if their volume goes up, that's
absolutely
beneficial.
Yeah.
Got it.
Yeah.
Okay.
From
Thank
a
you.
Protocol perspective, Hi. It's neutral. Go ahead.
Sorry, I hear a couple of minutes late, but I just wanted to throw in like, basically, the way that the AMM works is there's all these different inputs to the option pricing model. The pricing model that we're using accounts for the rebate program that we've had in place, and it's not sustainable long-term to do that. And we can't really continue like, you know, down this route. Like, would just any success that we have would drain Treasury Council. You know, so from our standpoint, like, without the rebate program, we basically have to, because they're now 30 basis points or higher, and we have dynamic fees, we would have to sort of like change those parameters for our option pricing. And it actually like makes the markets, like, it would essentially, we'd basically have to deprecate the market. Like, it wouldn't be useful.
Makes sense. Can you talk to like what your timeline and path looks like to using something like the perps product, and if this is like a temporary holdover that we should expect and that you're migrating to perps in the future, or is this something that you see as a long-term solution that we need to evaluate how we better support in V3 as well?
We have a leap at Lyra that is put up by me and the synthetics ambassadors to integrate Perps V2. And that went live for discussion today. It's not been proposed yet. But I would say, like, it's definitely on our radar. We have perpetuals and cash stablecoin collateralization in USDC on Arbitrum. And the way that that mechanism works in itself is a lot more capital efficient than the way that it works with the spot assets. So it's definitely something that we are keen to see as well. And I don't think, like, from a synthetic standpoint, but also from a Lyra standpoint, like, the spot assets just aren't as useful. It's not like the greatest use case to have them posted as collateral versus, like, traded as a hedge, right?
So I guess the concern of what I'm really asking is, like, as we move to V3 over the coming months, we're going to see, you know, liquidity drop on the current product, and we're going to want to offboard that at some point in time. Do you have a rough gauge of when we should expect?
So we only have, and maybe this is a wrong assumption, but I would assume that you guys will still want liquidity for ETH and Bitcoin just to support atomic swaps, but maybe that's inaccurate. But yeah, as far as a timeline, like, as soon as possible, but I would say in the month's time frame, the idea would be to move to Perps V2, like, in the next couple of months, as soon as we can get, it will take some engineering work to do, and then if it passes, which hopefully it will, and then it would require, you know, an audit of that portion of the contract and then us migrating our pools. We definitely don't want to do that multiple times for, you know, V3 and all that stuff. So hope is to move to Perps V2 and that would be stable within the V3 system for some time. It would also let us launch, and I think we're pretty keen to explore other assets, you know, that might have some interest with all the new markets that have been launched in Perps V2.
Got it. Thanks.
Sure.
So why would it take like a couple of months if the current workings, the current development is like one solution that hooks on to any derivative provider?
Why would it take a couple of months to integrate Perps V2 is the question?
Yeah.
So it's sourcing engineers to do the work. It's sourcing mechanism design team to confirm that, like, the design is going to be different a little bit from what it is on Arbitrum, but basically, like, there will need to be a check for the premium and discount blocking trades that have too high or too low from where the spot assets are trading. There will be checks for liquidity that you can trade, like, can't repeatedly open options with the AMM that it doesn't have the ability to hedge itself. There's just some different, like, things that will take time for them to evaluate, because the Perps V2 mechanism is also, like, a new product, and we'll have to have our own, you know, contract handling of different situations. And then, of course, we'll require an audit. So I think a couple months is pretty reasonable.
No, right. I from what I understood is that the update.
I'm sorry. I'm talking about for integrating with Perps V2 versus, like, the change that would allow the direct integration would be in the, like, I think week time frame.
Yeah, absolutely. My question was like, what I was referring to is the recent protocol update at Lyra that allowed, I thought, any per provider to hook on. But as you mentioned, probably there are, like, nuances related to premium discount. Yeah, so there's differences
between, right. There's differences between mechanism in the perpetual protocols. So it has to, you know, each one that is plugged in is like its own integration, unless you had like the exact same mechanism, which you do not.
Yeah, I understand. Although, like, because the purpose mechanism, it provides a bit more in terms of optionality, you know, in terms of what you can offer and
much more. Yeah, I mean, it's definitely, I think it's a great move all around, and it's definitely like something, I mean, at least I can say I've been pushing really hard for, yeah, and I'm pretty excited about. So I know like a few been particularly helpful answering lots of questions. So definitely something like we want to see get across the board. And I think it will be a great upgrade for Lyra as a protocol, but also like a way better interaction between Lyra and synthetics long term.
Perfect. Thank you.
All right. Any other questions for OnSIP 2006 direct integration with Lyra?
Thank you, Caleb, for proposing.
No worries. Hopefully, we'll get it implemented soon.
And all of your help.
My pleasure.
All right. Moving on, we have two more SIP presentations scheduled for this evening. I don't see David in the chat. If someone can ping him while we do the presentation for SIP 205, if he's ready to present. If not, SIP 2005, PERPS v2, slippage protection for liquidations by Caleb and Afif, and whoever is presenting it, you're up.
Sure, I can present it, no worries. So SIP 2005 is much needed update to the current liquidation mechanism on PERPS v2. So what it proposes to do is to split up the liquidation transaction into two separate transactions, a flagging transaction and a liquidation transaction. The flagging happens as it happens now, like when you get liquidated, you lose ability to interact with your position, and it gets basically hard, like enforced to close, and the margin is sent to the fee pool, whatever is left after paying the liquidator. So what this does is, like, when you flag an account, it's like, okay, this account is supposed to get liquidated. All right, that's like part one, and the flagger still receives the fee that currently is sent to the liquidator. So there's still an incentive to flag accounts for liquidation to set up the necessary transaction. Now, the second part is the liquidation event. Liquidation event is twofold, two parts. Either it happens immediately after flagging in case certain criteria is met, and that criteria is dependent on the current premium discount. So what that means is that you could have like flagging and liquidation taking place in the same transaction, and that's called we call it spontaneous liquidation. So it's like liquidation now, except for it happens in with flagging and then liquidation, and it can be called by anyone. There's no restriction. And so the requirement is that the price impact of the liquidation has to be below a certain max liquidation delta, you know, and that is specifiable by SECP, or the premium discount has to be below a max premium discount in absolute terms, of course. So why do we have this? We have this in order to protect the liquidation event, you know. So liquidation is not like very random. What happens is that when a certain price hits, a liquidation can be enacted, and that's kind of a deterministic action. And so therefore, like, we could expect the premium or discount to move by a certain amount given this liquidation event. And if the premium is supposed to move by a certain amount, then what can happen is that someone can take advantage of it. And so to lean against it, you have this flagging and liquidation. And so why can't it happen now? Why are we like kind of protected against this event? Because the open interest limits and the liquidation, the skew scale is set currently in a way that doesn't allow one to profit, because the position that can be taken, that can be liquidated, would not offer enough PD change to move the price in a way that covers the fees to attack a liquidation event. And so, but thinking ahead, you know, thinking in the future, if you want to raise open interest limits beyond what they are now, if we have like a bit larger liquidations taking place on chain, in order to safely enact them, we need this flagging, then liquidation set of transactions to take place. So if the criteria isn't met and spontaneous liquidation can't take place, then you have like this concept of forced liquidation. Forced liquidation is done by endorsed addresses. Endorsed addresses are addresses that are designated by the protocol. And initially, we designed it like this in order to get a feel about the extent of liquidation, how far PD would move. Of course, with PERP3, we'd hope to move to a more decentralized approach. So it's a bit iterative, kind of like the latency circuit breaker. We take one approach until we like find the right set of tools to approach this kind of problem. And so endorsed liquidators, they would be able to like enact a liquidation, and they'd like be designated by PDAO, and they follow a certain logic that would be safe on the protocol. So what does safe mean? Safe, it means that no one could attack it and attack a liquidation event. And if there's an attack, then there would be a delay until the liquidation actually takes place on chain. So there is something important here to mention, is that liquidation still happens. Like if someone his margin is exhausted, he still gets flagged. So there's no like, okay, there's a delay, so like prices revert and he can close his position without paying the penalty. No, that doesn't happen. If you're flagged, you lose access to your position until you're liquidated, either by spontaneous liquidation or by forced liquidation. And so having the liquidation event, having the flagging event take place on chain, there is a small gap of time between the time when liquidation is enacted. It depends on how big is the position, what kind of PD are we at, how much did the PD move. These are things that need to be considered. One last thing to mention is that there is something important to note, that when a liquidation takes place, it's not that stakers are automatically off the hook, you know, because what is required is that arbitrages to happen. So like, let's say we're balanced with like 1,000 ETH long, 1,000 ETH short, and the liquidation take place on the short. It doesn't mean that if prices continue to go up, that the debt pool doesn't take the hit. This requires that arbitrages to happen and to balance out the skew. So even after liquidation takes place, normally you have a small gap of time where arbitrages need to step in and rebalance the skew. And this is enforced with different things that we have in place, like the funding rate, like the PD, and as well as the liquidation premium, the buffer, which is supposed to like kind of also add on top a buffer which allows a bit of room before a bit of room for arbitrages to materialize. That's about it. It's a bit pretty technically difficult one, maybe. I'm happy to take any questions.
For the sake of transparency, would you be willing to operate in the SIP on the selection process for the endorsed liquidators?
Well, the sure. The selection would be by PDAO, you know, initially. There'd be like currently PDAO has the ability. We could have the selection be done by the Spartan Council. It's not an issue. But it has to be kind of, not anyone can be an endorsed liquidator. It has to be a trusted party. So I can add it that the Spartan Council needs to vote. But I would prefer SCCP rather than SIP because it's a bit asking to set up a SIP just for endorsing a liquidator, you know.
Can you change the SIP then to include within the configurable values the...
Sure. No problem.
And yeah, I guess there's also the question of who isn't going to be allowed to be an endorsed liquidator as well as who is. For the sake people not serving their own interests.
Sure. Endorsed liquidators receive no compensation. It's important to mention that. So, like, if currently you do flagging, you receive a reward for flagging. If you perform a spontaneous liquidation, you receive a reward. If you do a forced liquidation, you receive nothing, you know? So I wouldn't think like there's like many people that would be wanting to be endorsed liquidators, you know, because there's no economic benefit of being endorsed. It's just maybe stopgap till we have like a better grasp of the liquidation processes and a better solution, decentralized one. Hopefully with Perps V3.
I mean, if it's there's no economic incentive for sending the actual liquidation transaction, it kind of raises more questions about who is doing it and why it is a party who is considered distinct from the protocol themselves.
It is it's. What do you mean a distinct from the protocol?
Creating a classification of endorsed liquidators, which assumes a separation. You're endorsing another party. You don't obviously need to endorse yourself. So it assumes an externality. And if there's no economic incentive for doing it, then it raises the question of why anyone external would do it.
Well, it's kind of like the latency circuit breaker, you know, Tera, where you had to allow someone to circuit break the feed when prices moved significantly on-chain from whatever is off-chain. And thankfully, like most of the latency circuit breakers now are no longer operational. Because they're no longer needed because of PIT, you know. And so it's kind of a similar situation where you have a endorsed account that can make a special action. And that special action is enacting a liquidation with regardless of the requirements for spontaneous. Like liquidations can take place, you know, with spontaneous liquidation. And I would expect that most of them, looking at the liquidations that took place over the last few days, they mostly took place at a criteria that I would expect to be spontaneously liquidated. But there would be like edge cases and we're trying to cover them. Hopefully there will be a long-term solution again. That is more decentralized than this. But in the meantime, this is a short-term stopgap that allows us to be more flexible with parameters in terms of raising open interest and modification of the liquidation buffer ratio and excuse scale. Sorry.
Okay, that's a position that isn't really covered in the SIP, the desire for it to be a short-term solution, an eventual transition to a decentralized or a more decentralized method, just FYI.
I think we did mention it somewhere. Let me see. It is important to mention that spontaneously. Yeah, so for the sake of expedient rollout of perpetual and as an initial safety precaution, liquidator endorsement would be used. But we can add to that sentence, if you prefer, that more decentralized approach would be utilized in the next iteration of PERPS.
All right, any more questions on SIP 2005? All right, Caleb, I guess 2005 and 2006 are ready for a vote then, correct?
Yeah, hopefully 2006 and 2005 have set up the votes for them this week. I believe David didn't join, you know, but... I don't know if Afif can present his SIP, you know, or are you not ready for that?
He said he messaged him and he was sick, but if he wants to present it, yeah.
Well, I guess we'll schedule it for another day then.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you, everyone.
Thanks, everyone.
Thanks.